I personally want to thank you guys from all of us, for being here and sharing these songs and your lives with us. It's right. And you know, because this is a marriage seminar, I just automatically tie everything in to marriage. There's got to be some kind of an application here. And I was sitting back there listening to them, and I thought, I wonder how many hours of practice they put in to be able to come up here and do this in such a delightful and wonderful and professional way. And my guess is it's many, 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 many hours of practice. All right, let's apply that to marriage. How many hours of practice do we put in? Or we just kind of flow with the honey. You know, we play it out of our hip pocket. We kind of play it by ear. See, there's no way they could do that, what they've done tonight, what they've done this weekend, if they just came up here and tried to wing it. Huh? No way. And yet, we think we can do it in marriage. And folks, there's just no way we can do it. We've got to make it a priority. We've got to work at it. We've got to practice in order to make our marriages what we really want them to be and what God wants them to be. So I that's my application of you guys singing tonight. Fantastic. If you got your Bibles, I'd like to have you turn to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. I'm going to speak just to the men tonight, you husbands, and if you ladies want to stay, you're welcome. If you would like to leave, feel free. It won't bother me a bit. But, you know, you might want to stay. And I want to do something tonight I've never done before with this passage. I'm going to read you verses 22 to 33. And I want us to get a little numerical here. Now, I realize that numerics in the Bible don't always go together. I mean, you know, we've got verse numbers and chapter numbers and so forth. But what I want you to do is I want you to count a few things as we read this. Now, I don't want you to miss the message, but I do want you to count, because there are two things that wives are to do in this passage, and there are two things that husbands are to do in this passage. And what I would like to have you do as we read it is you just count how many times it's talking about the one thing and then the second thing that wives are to do, and then the one thing and the second thing that husbands are to do. Okay? And then after we get finished, we'll count them up and see how it tallies out. I've never done this before. It may not work. Here we go. Verse 22. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. Now that's once, right? On submission, huh? That's once, okay. That's what I mean. You count how many times that comes up now. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of church. Okay, there's once for the husband being the head. As Christ is the head of the church, his body, of which he is the Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In this same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it just as Christ does the church, for we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Okay, let's get the numerics first. How many times does it talk about submission to wives? Twice. How many times does it talk about headship for husbands? Once. How many times does it talk about respect from wives? Respect, wives respect your husband. How many times? Once. How many times does it talk about husbands loving their wives? How many?
Five.
Well, it's mentioned five, but it's really three commands. There's three times, 25, 28, and 33. Now, I don't know whether this really means anything. But it's really interesting to me that in just 11 short verses, God tells us husbands three times that we're supposed to love our wives. He tells our wives only twice to be submissive, only once to respect us, and only once does he deal with the issue of headship. So just from a purely numerical point of view, where is the emphasis here? Husbands, love your wives. Now, like I say, I'm not sure that that really means too much in terms of just the numerics of it. But I think it means an awful lot in the fact that God does say to us husbands three times, all of which are a command that we are to love our wives. And the first one is significantly important because of the comparison that it makes. Husbands, in verse 25, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. As far as I know, this is the only time in the New Testament where one specific person is commanded to love another specific person as Christ loved the church. Now, there are many times in the New Testament where we as Christians are commanded to love one another, and as Christ loves us, that we're to love one another. But that's kind of a general, those are general statements. This is the only time that I'm aware of in the New Testament where one specific person, a husband, is to love one other specific person, his wife, as Christ loves the church. In fact, I will go so far as to say I believe that this is, and this is a command. In the original language, the Greek, this is a command. It's in that grammatical form. I will go so far as to say that I believe this is the most important command in all of the scriptures to Christian husbands. Now, isolating us just as a husband, as a Christian husband. There are obviously many other commands that are more important to us as Christians. But as to me, to you, as a Christian husband, this is without a doubt the most important command in all of the Scripture. And I tell you something else I believe. I believe that, guys, if we could do this every day, if we could learn how to love our wives every day as Christ loved the church, our wives would not have a problem with submission. We wouldn't have near so many conflicts. Headship, in the sense that we sometimes think of it as being the boss, wouldn't even be an issue. Because love covers so many other things, if it's done properly. And of course, if it's done as Christ loved the church, it's certainly done properly. But, you know, we obviously then ask the question, it comes to all of our minds, well, how did Christ love the church? If he is to be our example, and that's what we're to practice and emulate, then how did Christ love the church? In a way that I can, as a husband here, with shoe leather and in human form and with all my fallacies, how can I take that and put it into practice in an everyday way? Well, there's many ways that you could pick out of the Scripture in which Christ demonstrates his love to us as his body, the church. There's many ways that you could go into the Scripture and show God's love for man. But I think there, from Genesis to Revelation, there is an overriding principle that covers all of it. And it's this. Whenever you find in the Scriptures God's love expressed toward man, Christ's love expressed toward His church, it is always expressed in terms of actions. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish, but have everlasting life. There's action involved there. John 3:16. Romans 5:8. But God extended or commended His love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He did something about His love. And every time you find God's love expressed toward man in the Scriptures, it's always expressed in terms of actions. God is never satisfied with just patting us on the head and saying, I love you. He does that many times. He says it in the Scriptures. But He always follows it up with something that He does for us. Well, if that's the overriding principle in the Scripture, then how does that apply to us? As husbands, loving our wives as Christ loved the church. I think it's pretty obvious. We need to put shoe leather to our love. It's got to go beyond words. There's got to be action to it. Deeds of love. Now, Carol mentioned this morning, I think it was, that love is a decision. It's more than a feeling. Oftentimes it is a feeling. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. But the deep kind of love that it's talking about here in Ephesians chapter 5 goes way beyond feelings. It's a decision that we make. See, God made a decision to have His Son, Jesus Christ, come into the world to die on a cross. And that decision was His love. Well, those are the kinds of decisions that we've got to make in the course of everyday living. We've got to decide that we are going to do love to our wives. Now, obviously, we don't always feel loving. I have guys come to me, and I've had them, you know, several times say, Jack, I just don't love her anymore. What do you mean you don't love her anymore? Well, I don't feel like I love her. And that word feel always gets in there. And when this has happened on occasion, we've talked about it, I've drawn them out, we've continued the conversation, but eventually I usually get around to the question. When was the last time you did an act of love for your wife? You actually did something for her that was a demonstration that you really cared, you were concerned about her, you loved her. Not words that you said, but an act that you did. And usually the scenario runs like this. They hang their head. They look like they're thinking, but they really know the answer. And it's been 6 months or a year. That's usually what comes out. And they're equating their feelings, their lost feelings of love, with what true love really is all about. Action. But let's just pause and stop and talk about that for a minute. How do you deal with feelings of not loving somebody? Or feelings of anger? Or sometimes around our house we have what we call a DRA, a dirty, rotten attitude. How do you deal with that? When it springs up, when you have a DRA, you certainly don't want to have anything to do with love. I mean, that's the further. It's usually you want to kick them in the pants or something. You don't feel your way into acting. You act your way into feeling. Think about that. You don't feel your way into being loving. You act loving and the feelings come trailing along. Several years ago, I had my office over here at the U.S. headquarters. And it was a Friday night. I was heading home. I was walking out of the office. And it had been a lousy week. As you know, I'm a perfectionist. I like things nice and tidy and neat and tied up and wrapped in neat packages by the end of the week. And none of that had happened. I had stuff laying on my desk that was still undone, decisions that hadn't been made, that should have been made. And I really left the office with what I referred to as a DRA. I really had a bad, dirty, rotten attitude. And Carol and I, this was a Friday night, and Carol and I were going to have the whole weekend together by ourselves, which was sort of unusual. And I didn't want to wreck it, and I knew that if I went home feeling the way I did, I could very well say something that would put a damper on the whole weekend, and we'd just have a miserable time together. And I didn't want to do that. So I began to crank myself up by my own bootstraps. You know, I tried to, okay, Mayhall, now just change your attitude. Get with it, boy. This is real stuff. This is where life lives. I mean, you're talking, you know, and I tried to talk myself in it. It didn't work. I pulled out of the parking lot, and I still had the DRA. It hadn't improved one bit. So as I pulled onto 30th Street, I shot up a word of prayer. I said, Lord, help me. I don't know what to do. I don't want to go home feeling this way. What can I do? Almost instantly, an idea flew into my mind. And it was such a terrific idea, I knew it had come right straight from the portals of heaven. And this was the idea. Stop at the Hallmark store at the Mall of the Bluffs and get Carol a gift. Man, what a terrific idea. Well, then I got to thinking about it, though. I mean, this was early November. Her birthday was past. Our anniversary was gone. Christmas was way down the road. Thanksgiving wasn't even here yet. There was no occasion to get Carol a gift. And so I wrestled with that for a while. That's a terrific. I'm going to do it anyway. So I drove and pulled into the parking lot, the Mall of the Bluffs, and got out of the car, walked into the Hallmark store, and I didn't have a ghost of an idea what to get her. Didn't have a clue. And I just looked around, you know, trying to find something that I thought she would like. And finally, I found this neat little thing. It was three candles, red candles, about that big around each, and different heights, three of them. And then around the bottom was a little green furry piece. You know, it was a it was a centerpiece for Christmas. And I knew she'd love it, so I had him put it in a box, gift wrap it. I got her a card. And walked out of the store, and by the time I got back to the car with this little love token in my hand, I didn't spend a lot of money, probably less than $10 for the whole thing, including the card and the gift wrapping. I could tell the DRA was fading. Got in the car, 5 minutes home to the house, pulled in the drive, opened the garage door, and by the time I walked in the house, And Carol warmly greeted me, as she usually does, and I handed this to her for no reason. The DRA had totally disappeared. She loved it. We had a wonderful weekend together. Now see, you don't feel your way into acting loving. You act loving, and then the feelings come trailing along. By the time I walked in the door with that little love token in my hands, man, I was feeling loving. And we had a great weekend. Next time you leave the office or work or the shop with a DRA, guys, I challenge you to try it. Or some other circumstances. See, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. The overriding principle in the scriptures is that he did it by actions. See, that was an action. That was an act of love. And it not only worked with her, it worked with me. That's the amazing thing about it. It worked with me too. Someone wrote, love is essential to both husbands and wives. To be admired is essential to both husbands and wives. But to be loved is more important to a woman, and to be admired is vital to a man. There is something about the makeup of women that they've got to be reassured of our love all the time, every day. First Corinthians 13 is probably the great chapter on love in the scriptures. And if you read through that carefully, you'll discover that all of the verbs that are used in that passage to describe love, either in a negative or positive way, are action verbs. It's not just some ethereal thing, or it's not just a thought or an idea. It's something you do or you don't do in terms of showing love or not showing love. Henry Drummond has written a little book entitled The Greatest Thing in the World. It's just a little booklet. You can get it in any Christian bookstore. It's been in the market for years. You can sit down and read it through in less than an hour. And it's a little exposition of 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And his conclusion at the end of that is, in order to be loving, act loving. It's that simple. But it isn't simple, is it? That's hard to do sometimes. But that's the idea behind this statement. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Now, how can we do that as husbands in a practical way every day? I mean, let's get down to where we live. Let me make three suggestions. In fact, I hope you take them as more than suggestions. Three ideas. Three things that you as a husband, that I as a husband can do every day that will show our wives in one way or another that we love them, that we care, that we're concerned. Okay, here they are. Number one, as a husband, I aim to do this every day. Tell her I love her. Say those three little words that leave her dancing on air and gasping for breath. Go hang yourself. No, I mean, I love you. It's amazing to me how hard it is for some guys to get out those words. Just, it's kind of like the guy I heard about, you know, his wife was after him and to do it. And he says, look, I told you when we got married that I loved you. If I change my mind, I'll let you know. Like I said, there's something about the makeup of a woman that she needs to hear this. Now, I know that words are not everything, and I'm kind of contradicting what I just said, but we're gonna go on with this. It gets tougher, guys. This is the simple part. Just saying it, I love you. I heard about this one guy. His wife had been nagging him about it, and that probably is not good. And just to say it once in a while, honey. And so he was a little bit of a amateur carpenter, and so he had a little workshop down in his basement. He went downstairs, got a nice piece of oak and cut it out just the right size, got a burning tool out, burned in it, I love you, painted it just nice, got a hook on the back of it, took it upstairs, hung it in the kitchen over the kitchen sink, went and got his wife, brought her in, says, now there, does that do it? Well, no, not really. Nice gesture, but that doesn't get the job done. Every day, I aim to tell her that I love her. Now, let's put that into practice right now. How many of you guys today have told your wife that you love her? Let me see your hands. If you have, man, that's great. Well, most of you. Most of you. That's pretty good. Of course, it's late in the day. You've had plenty of opportunity. Now, for those of you who haven't done that yet, I want to give you the opportunity right now. What I want you to do is just put your arm around her. And if you guys who have done it want to do it again, that's fine. I'm sure your wives will not complain. So just put your arm around her, give her a little squeeze, and tell her. Just go ahead. Now, no smooching. Okay. Isn't that great? Every day, I aim to tell her that I love her. Okay. Words are cheap. This gets tough. Every day, I aim to do something nice for her. Here's where the actions come in. To do something nice for her in order to express your love. Putting your love into shoe leather. And you know, it doesn't need to be big things. Not, you know, nothing costly or expensive necessarily. terrific. Yeah, terrific. Taking out the garbage. Faithfully. Yeah. I mean, you don't do it every day, but, you know, Thursday morning, that takes care of Thursday, okay? How many of you guys have a honey-do list? You know, honey, would you please do this? Honey, would you please do that? Most of us do. You know, we've either got it written down or we've got it up here in our minds. Things that she wants you to do around the house that just, you know, she doesn't know how to handle. So she's asking, how many of you are all caught up on your honey-do list? Everything is taken care of, huh? No hands. Oh, one over here. Okay. He's probably retired, I bet. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, job never done. Yeah. Well, that's probably true. Yeah. I learned this the hard way a number of years ago. The house that we're now living in, when we moved in, we were trying to decide on what kind of window coverings to put on a couple of windows in our bedroom that were kind of oddball type windows, real narrow, about like that, and tall, and then there was a wall space between them like that, and then another one, two of them. And so we finally figured out to put the kind of a drape on it that folds up. You know, you pull a cord and then you wrap the cord around a hook in the wall. And that worked fine for many, many years until one of those hooks began to come loose in the wall. And Carol had asked me several times, I put the emphasis on several, to fix that. And I hadn't gotten around to it. It was part of her honey-do list. And I just neglected it. And probably for months. I hate to even admit that, but it probably had gone on for months. Well, I never paid much attention to it, really, I think, because I'm usually up before she is, and I'm downstairs busy doing stuff, and she gets up, and then she pulls this thing up, and she has to fool with it. And so, you know, it never really affected me personally. Until one Saturday morning, I was sleeping in, and she was up before I was, and I finally got up and was kind of moseying around and shaving and getting dressed, and finally I got around to pulling up this curtain. And I tried to wrap the cord around this hook in the wall that was hanging there by about one thread of one screw. And it couldn't be done with two hands. I mean, you needed a third hand or, you know, some kind of a miraculous machinery to do it. Well, I thought, man, this is ridiculous to have this like this. So I stood back in my objective way and figured out exactly what I needed down the basement to fix it. I was still in my pajamas and robe, walked down the basement, got what I needed, brought it back upstairs, fixed the thing, took the stuff back down the basement, and then went about my day and thought no more about it. I never timed it. I really didn't time it. But my guess is that it probably took maybe 10 or 12 minutes, including both trips up and down the stairs to the basement. So that's what I had neglected to do. Well, the next morning, Sunday morning, I was up early and downstairs in the family room and having a cup of coffee and reading my Bible. And pretty soon I heard Carol get up and our bedroom floor squeak. So I could hear when she gets up and, you know, she's walking around. And there was a lot of movement up there for a while. And then all of a sudden it got very quiet. And then from upstairs I hear this shriek. You fixed it! And she came roaring downstairs and threw her arms around me and gave me a hug and a kiss. That was when I knew how important that little honey-do list was to her and what it communicated. I'd never realized that before. Guys, it's not difficult to do this. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. It really isn't expensive or hard. It just takes a little bit of creativity and imagination. It takes some thinking. And someone has said, think, there is so little competition. You know, little things. For instance, what is it that your wife really enjoys doing from time to time, but you couldn't care less if you ever did that the rest of your life? Huh? Well, with me, it's probably window shopping. Carol, she really enjoys window shopping. That's not the way I approach buying anything. Like, you know, we were talking about last night. But from time to time, because I know she enjoys it, we'll have an evening free, and I'll say, honey, let's go down to the Citadel. That's an indoor shopping center here, just about, 10 or 12 minutes from our house. I said, let's go down to the Citadel and look around. So we'll pile in the car, head down there, walk around, look in the store windows. Very seldom buy anything. We'll stop at the pet store, you know, and look at the dogs and the cats and the mice and all the stuff they have there. And usually end up at Walgreens and have a Coke and talk for a while and then head on home. We had a great time. I enjoyed being with Carol, of course, and she's enjoyed, you know, we stop at the Walden bookstore and look over what's the latest and maybe buy a book. What is it with you? What's your wife enjoy doing that, you know, it really doesn't turn you on? But because she likes to do it, and you enjoy being with her, you do it. We were in California, this has been 3 or 4 years ago, and I think we'd had a marriage seminar, and a friend of ours was taking us to the airport in Oakland. And on the way to the airport, Bob said, tomorrow, this was late Saturday afternoon, or maybe it was Sunday afternoon, I can't remember. But anyway, he says, tomorrow, I'm going to take Bev to a quilt show. I said, what? He said, I'm going to take her to a quilt show. A quilt show, yeah, quilt show. I said, Bob, do you really enjoy quilt shows? He says, no, I really don't, but she does. And it's been a long time since she's had the opportunity, and there's a good one going on, so I thought I'd take her. I said, Bob, why are you doing that? He says, well, she enjoys it. I enjoy being with her. I suppose it's because I love her. That's what I'm talking about. Doing something nice for her. Now, guys, we can really get creative with this. This is a chance to let your imagination run wild and come up with stuff that will absolutely knock their socks off. I've come up with, maybe in my lifetime, 3 or 4 like that. Let me just tell you about one. Because I'm not the creative one in our relationship. Carol's got all the creative ideas. But once in a while, I come up with a humdinger. I'd accepted a speaking engagement on her birthday, July the 25th, months ahead. And, you know, when I wrote it in my date book, it didn't dawn on me that it was July the 25th. It was a Sunday. And it just slipped by me until a few weeks prior to that. And I look at my date, but, oh, good night. And so I went to Carol, and when I had the opportunity, I apologized. I said, honey, I am really sorry about that. And she said, well, yeah, I know. You didn't mean to do it. And so I was trying to think of something other than just the ordinary run-of-the-mill gift in a cart. You know, something beyond that, that was really a good idea. And I just couldn't come up with anything, and I was kind of discouraged with myself because I couldn't come up with something that I felt was worthy of her and making amends for this. And so Saturday morning, I was up real early, getting dressed, shaving, putzing around, doing some things. And as I was finishing up, I noticed down on the counter there in the bathroom an eyebrow pencil, her eyebrow pencil laying there. And so I got an idea. I picked it up, wrote it on the, just scribbled on the mirror, and then took a piece of Kleenex, see if it'd come off easy, and it did. So after I got dressed and finished everything, I took the eyebrow pencil and I wrote in the mirror there in the bathroom, happy birthday, I love you. I thought, man, that's a great idea. So I picked up the little soap dish sitting there on the formica top of the counter, and I wrote, happy birthday, I love you, and I set the soap dish down on top of that, knowing that sometime during the weekend she'd move the soap dish and find that. Well, then I got carried away. I mean, all over the house, on the glass door of the shower, happy birthday, I love you. Downstairs in the kitchen, 2 or 3 places, on the microwave door, you know, glass door, happy birthday, I love you. On the TV screen, happy birthday, I love you. Well, finally, I got her up, and she groggily got dressed, and we traipsed through the house and got in the car. She didn't see any of this. And she was too sleepy and took me to the airport. And Monday afternoon, I got home. She met me at the airport. Now, I had left, my secretary had left for me a gift and a card, had put it, had brought it over early Sunday morning and left it on our dining room table for Carol to find. Well, when Carol picked me up Monday afternoon, she didn't say anything about the card or the gift, but she raved about the happy birthday, I love you, that she found all over the house. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. There are very few things between a husband and a wife that should be competitive. You know, maybe your golf game, although I'm not sure I'd even recommend that. But this is one in which you can be competitive and have a ball together, trying to outdo each other on doing something nice for the other person. Isn't that a great idea? And so we've developed this between the two of us over the last several years, and trying to, you know, outdo one another on showing our love for each other by doing something nice. Not expensive gifts, but something creative and just kind of in a neat way says, I'm concerned about you, I care for you. And of course, Carol outdoes me, so I'm a failure at it almost compared to her. And she's got the cake right now. I don't know how she did this, but I got up early one morning. I don't know where I was headed, but it was some special day. I had something special on. I can't remember what it was, but I got up and was putzing around and I walked in the bathroom and lifted the lid of the stool. And there floating in the water was a red rose. I burst out laughing because, you know, to this day I don't know how she did it or when she did it. But I knew what she was trying to communicate. I love you. I care. I haven't topped that one yet. Boy. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Okay, those are two. Every day I aim to tell her I love her. Every day I aim to do something nice for her. Okay, here's the third one. Every day, I aim to pay her a compliment. The moral of this is, if you like it, say so. If you notice something that's nice, something she's done, the way she looks, what's happened, tell her so. So often we men we clam up. We don't say it when we ought to. Thomas Carlyle, very famous writer, both prose and poetry, was perceived as a tough, blunt, unfeeling man. But underneath that facade was a man who saw himself as affectionate and loving. He dearly loved his wife, but was never able to express that love to her convincingly. He simply traveled through his marriage, assuming she knew what was going on in his heart. His biographer says that when Carlyle's wife died, he became distraught. He became obsessed with trying to find out whether she knew how much he'd loved her. He found her diaries, and he started reading them, hoping he'd find comments about their relationship. He was horrified when he discovered that she hadn't the slightest sense of his feelings for her. She died believing she was totally unloved. In fact, the only comments he did find about their relationship centered on her resentment of his temper. The discovery almost killed him, and he lived his life wishing his wife could return for just 5 minutes so he could pour out his love to her. And of that same man, another person writes, one of the deep regrets of Thomas Carlyle was his failure to tell his wife Jane how much he loved her and appreciated her constant loyalty and encouragement. After her death, he wrote in self-reproach these words, "What silences we keep year after year with those who are near to us and dear, till out of sight and out of mind they go, or out of reach they go, these dear, familiar friends who loved us so. We think with vain regret of some kind word that once we might have said, and they have heard. But of course then, it's too late. I don't know how many wives Carol has run into who have shared with her their heart, how much they long for their husbands to show love through appreciation, to say some kind words, to say something, honey, that was great. What a wonderful meal. Gee, you look super. You know, you come home from work and she's been to the beauty parlor and you walk in and there she is in all of her splendor and glory and you don't say anything. Passing up a tremendous opportunity. And you know who picks up on this? Your kids. We dads are supposed to be examples to our children. Well, complimenting mom on stuff is a tremendous example. Little junior, 10-year-old Danny gets home from school and mom has been to the beauty parlor. And he walks in the house and notices and he says, gee, mom, you look great. Where did he get that? He heard dad do it. That's where he got it. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church. Family life holds together on the thin thread of praise and commendation. Unhappily, we have a way of withholding expressions of appreciation and gratitude to those nearest to us. In Vermont, so the story runs, a tight-lipped husband finally said to his wife, when I think of how much you've meant to me all these years, it is almost more than I can do sometimes to keep from telling you so. Oh, man. So every day, I aim to tell her I love her, do something nice for her, and pay her a compliment. Now that's the beginning. Let's continue. Let me ask you guys a couple of questions. Are you fun to live with? Are you fun to live with? Do you kind of make life exciting around your house? You know, always kind of keeping everybody on edge, wondering what dad's going to do next? Have you developed what someone has called the habit of happiness? One of the most important characteristics of a marriageable person, someone has written, is the habit of happiness. It would be impossible to overestimate the value of cultivating this trait in oneself and of seeking it in a marriage partner. Proverbs puts it this way in Proverbs 17:22, a cheerful heart is a good medicine, but a downcast spirit dries up the bones. You have a cheerful heart? Or do you walk around most of the time with a DRA? In other words, when you come home from work and you've had a bad day, does it show the minute you walk in the door and the dog runs out onto the back porch and the kids kind of keep doing what they're doing, looking out of the corner of their eye, and your wife, she doesn't know whether she should say anything or not before she gets a good feel of the situation. That's terrible. See, we as husbands have the responsibility to set the atmosphere in our home. And we want that atmosphere, we should want that atmosphere to be one of happiness and joy. Now, I realize there are ups and downs in life. And we all have hard times. We go through difficult situations. But I'm talking about the difference between the climate and the weather. The climate in our house should be one of joyfulness. And I mean, the weather's going to change from day to day, but the climate stays the same, see? And we want to set a climate. And we are to do that. That's our responsibility as a husband. So, are you fun to live with? You ought to be. You ought to work at that. Making life exciting around your house. May I ask you another question? By my actions, how would my wife list these six items in order of priority in my life. By my actions, not by what I tell her, but by my actions, as she observes me in action, how would she list these six items in terms of priority in my life? What would be number one, number two? I've got these all mixed up there in no particular order. And I challenge you guys to do that. I'm not sure tonight before you go to bed would be the best time to talk about this, but maybe tomorrow on your way home or sometime when you've got a little time together, ask her this. Some of you may be shocked right out of your shoes. We've talked to wives, and we ask them this question, and we show them this list, and they say, oh, no question. Every spare minute that my husband has, that's discretionary time, that he can do anything he wants to with, he spends it doing this, number six. His favorite hobby or sport, whatever it might be. He reads books on it. He spends time preparing for it. He spends time doing it. Everything else comes secondary to that, including his job. Or some wives will say, well, his job, that's absolutely number one. He eats, breathes, sleeps, his job. Now let me ask you a question. From a biblical point of view, what should be number one on a husband's priority list using these six as the list? What should be number one? Number two, right, absolutely. His relationship to God. But guys, do we do that? Do we really work at developing our relationship to God? Because, see, this affects all of these. And the stronger this is, the more positive effect it's going to have on all the rest. So we really do need to concentrate on it. We need to make that a priority. Now, when I use the word priority here, I'm not talking about time. I'm talking about emphasis. Biblically, what should be number two? Right. No question about it. Then you get down to three and, you know, probably five. But from then on, it kind of blurs scripturally. It depends a little bit on the situation at a given time as to what becomes a priority. But the first three are pretty clear in the Bible. Your relationship with God, your wife, and your kids. And we need to make sure that our priorities are straight on this. We need to work at this. One more thing, and then I'm finished. Every day, or at least every week, in some way or another, we need, as husbands, to communicate to our wives that next to God Himself, they are number one in our thoughts. Let me repeat that. Every day, at least every week, in some way or another, we need to communicate to our wives by word or action that next to God Himself, they are number one in our thoughts. Now, how do we do this? And what does it do for them? Well, I'll tell you what it does for them. It gives them a sense of security that you can be counted on, that you'll be there when the chips are down. Because if it happens in the little things, that they know that you're thinking about them in the little things, they know that when the big thing comes along, the real crisis, you'll be there. They can count on you. That's what it communicates to them. And we do this in a lot of little ways. You know, you're at the office or at work, and supper is served, say, at 6 o'clock at your house. And you realize, you know, early in the afternoon, mid-afternoon, you're not going to be able to make it by 6. Something's come up and you're going to have to stay late, or you've got an errand to run or something. So what do you do? Well, if you're smart, you pick up the phone, take 20 seconds and call her and tell her, honey, I've gotten tied up. I'm going to be late. Can you delay supper till 7? What does that say to her? You're thinking about her. She was in your thoughts. You go shopping, and you're looking for a new couch for the living room. And you like that one, and she likes that one. Which one do you buy? This one. Huh? Right. See, she's got to live with that couch a lot more than you do. And let's face it, guys, it really doesn't make that much difference to you anyway. But what does it communicate to her? That, you know, you're thinking about her. You're concerned about her ideas, what she wants. That's what I'm talking about. A lot of little ways that during the day, during the week, we can communicate to them that next to God Himself, she's number one in our thoughts. Now, let me read you a negative illustration of that. This guy, he had it all put together wrong. This is another little excerpt from Charlie Shedd's book, Letters to Philip. He says, "Let me present one of the prize illustrations of why women cut their wrists and drown themselves in bathtubs. It is also why they leave notes that read, 'Dear John, I've gone away with Herbert. Goodbye.' Fortunately, that didn't happen here, but some women are made of very stern stuff. This one was. She came into my study looking for all the world like she just dedicated her life to getting even. The reason she looked that way is that she had just dedicated her life to getting even. She'd been in an automobile accident 5 days before. Now, some women go all to pieces at times like this. Others, bless their hearts, experience a sudden rush of good judgment. So, being one of the latter and a dutiful wife, as soon as she could, she phoned her husband. Now, what should a man do first when that happens? Sure. Of course, he didn't do that. Instead, he asked, how much damage did it do to the car? Well, I mean, you got to give him credit. It was practically a new Oldsmobile. Query number two was, whose fault was it? You know that we all sound unsure of ourselves part of the time, and particularly when our nerves are shattered. So since her answers did not quite suit him, he gave her explicit instructions. Obviously one of those guys who thinks of all the angles except the right one. His third offering was this little gem. Listen, darling, do not admit one thing. You phone the insurance company, and I'll call a lawyer. Do you understand what I mean? She understood. Then to show you that even an idiot can do some things right, he added, just a minute, I'll give you the insurance man's number. Thank you so much, she said. Aren't there any more questions? No, he replied. I think that about covers it. Oh, does it, she shouted. Well, just in case you're interested, I'm in the hospital with 5 broken ribs. Question. How can a man effectively say I'm sorry after he's done one like that? No way, effectively. He may say I'm sorry, but it's not very effective. Of course, I suppose in his behalf it should be noted that he knew the accident wasn't fatal. Dead wives do not make phone calls. Now, he communicated something to his wife, didn't he? Where she stood on his priority list. And it was somewhere down below the new Oldsmobile. Not exactly sure where, but below that. See, every day, or at least every week, we need to communicate to our wives that next to God Himself, they are number one in our thoughts. This is all part of husbands love your wives. Now, let me read you another little story that's far better. When the new car was sideswiped on a trip to the supermarket, Mary Branson stopped and tearfully fumbled in the glove compartment for the insurance papers. Attached to them, she found an envelope with her name on it in her husband's handwriting. Dear Mary, the note said, when you need these papers, remember, it's you I love, not the car. Wow. Man, what a difference, huh? It's you I love, not the car. This is a story of a businessman who finally decided to do something about this matter of showing his wife he loved her. He said, I made a vow to myself on the drive down to the vacation beach cottage. For 2 weeks, I would try to be a loving husband and father. For 2 weeks, I would try to be a loving husband and father. Totally loving. No ifs, ands, or buts. The idea had come to me as I was listening to a commentator on the car's tape player. He was quoting a biblical passage about husbands being thoughtful of their wives. Then he went on to say, love is an act of the will. A person can choose to love. To myself, I had to admit that I'd been a selfish husband, that our love had been dulled by my own insensitivity, in petty ways, really, chiding Evelyn for her tardiness, insisting on the TV channel I wanted to watch, throwing out day-old newspapers that I knew Evelyn still wanted to read. Well, for 2 weeks, all that was going to change. And it did. Right from the moment I kissed Evelyn at the door and said, that new yellow sweater looks great on you. Oh, Tom, you noticed, she said, surprised and pleased, maybe a little perplexed. After the long drive, I wanted to sit and read. Evelyn suggested a walk on the beach. I started to refuse, but then I thought, Evelyn's been alone here with the kids all week, and now she wants to be alone with me. We walked on the beach while the children flew their kites. So it went. 2 weeks of not calling the Wall Street investment firm where I am a director. A visit to the Shell Museum, though I usually hate museums. And I enjoyed it. Holding my tongue while Evelyn getting ready made us late for a dinner date. Relaxed and happy, that's how the whole vacation passed. I made a new vow to keep on remembering to choose love. There was one little thing that went wrong with my experiment, however. Evelyn and I still laugh about it today. On the last night at our cottage, preparing for bed, Evelyn stared at me with the saddest expression on her face. What's the matter? I asked her. Tom, she said in a voice filled with distress, do you know something I don't? What do you mean? Well, that checkup I had several weeks ago, you know, our doctor, did he tell you something about me? Tom, you've been so good to me. Am I dying? Oh. It took a moment for it all to sink in. Then I burst out laughing. No, honey, I said, wrapping her in my arms. You're not dying. I'm just beginning to live. And guys, that can happen to us if we can begin every day to put into practice the concept, the principle, the biblical command, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, and really begin to live.